When you count the till at the end of the night in a single store, you really expect the cash in the drawer to match the printed report exactly. Like if the drawer is short by $20, you know exactly which register has the problem. It is a closed loop. The math is just right there in front of you.
Yeah, that is definitely the ideal scenario. It is clean and visible and, well, entirely under your control.
Right. But then you scale up. You add a second location and then a 10th and then a 40th. And suddenly, that closed loop just completely disappears.
It vanishes.
Yeah, you are staring at this massive gap between what the stores say they made and what actually hits your bank account.
So, welcome to the deep dive. For this session, you are basically sitting in on a working meeting between two operators right here at My Pay Advisor. My co-host is our senior payments advisor, and I am an analyst on the team.
And we are speaking directly to you, the operator of a U.S. merchant processing, say, between $25,000 and $5 million in monthly volume. Right. We are treating this just like an internal strategy meeting. No fluff. Just the actual mechanics of how money moves and where it gets stuck.
Exactly what we need.
And we're going to anchor this whole conversation to a very specific hard number for 2026. Fixing multi-location reconciliation leaks allows an operator to recover 0.15 to 0.40% of their monthly processing volume.
Which is a huge deal.
It is cash sitting on the table right now. But before we get into the plumbing of how to actually get that money back using the source material from multi-location reconciliation, five leaks to fix in 2026, plus some federal data and visa rules, I just have to ask, why is this specific 0.15 to 0.40% recovery just sitting there? I mean, how does a merchant simply lose track of that much margin in the first place?
Well, it happens because most chain operators, they just accept a single daily bank deposit from their processor without ever matching it back to individual store performance.
Oh, wow. So they just trust the lump sum.
Pretty much. The industry standard default is to just bundle everything together. Think about it. When you have 20 stores processing transactions all day, the acquirer groups, all those authorizations, subtracts their fees and drops one lump sum into your bank account via automated clearinghouse.
Right, the ACH deposit.
Yeah. You see the deposit, you assume the processor did the math correctly, and you just write off any missing money as a generic cost of doing business.
Okay, let us unpack this. Because to understand how to capture that recovery, we first need to map exactly how money moves from a physical store terminal to your bank account. If you do not know the path, you cannot find the leak.
Right, and we can map that path really clearly using Federal Reserve Payment System research. The underlying mechanics are actually highly structured. Card-present settlements in the U.S. typically clear on a T+1 or T+2 cycle.
So, meaning 1 or 2 days.
Yeah, that means a transaction clears 1 or 2 days after the actual sale, depending on your acquirer and your specific risk profile.
Okay, so walk us through the actual journey of a single credit card swipe. Like, a customer buys a coffee. What happens next?
Well, the physical terminal captures the sale data. At the end of the day, the terminal batches those transactions. The processor then pulls that batch file and queues it up for clearing. Next, the acquirer routes each specific transaction to the networks, meaning entities like Visa or MasterCard.
Right.
Now, Visa explicitly notes in their rules that interchange reimbursement fees act as transfer fees between the acquiring bank and the issuing bank. The merchant does not actually pay interchange directly to Visa.
Oh, right. You pay the processor.
Right. Instead, you pay a negotiated merchant discount rate to your financial institution.
And those fees are calculated at the individual transaction level.
Precisely. They are assessed based on the card brand, the specific card product, your merchant category code, and the data quality of the transaction itself.
That is a lot of variables for one coffee.
It is. And after all those microscopic calculations are done, the acquirer finally sends the net amount to your bank account via ACH on that T+1 or T+2 timeline.
The scale of this process is difficult to comprehend until you look at the macro data. The Nilson report notes that U.S. card-present volume runs in the trillions of dollars annually, and chain merchants take a disproportionate share of that volume.
They definitely do.
It is one thing to track a T+1 settlement for a single coffee shop, but when a merchant scales from one location to 40 locations spread across different time zones, running on, say, two different point-of-sale systems, the complexity just multiplies. It creates massive blind spots.
And those blind spots are exactly where your margin disappears into thin air.
I like to think of this settlement process like a giant funnel. Picture 40 different store cash registers pouring their daily receipts into the top of this funnel. At the very bottom, all that money drips into one single bucket. That bucket represents your single corporate bank account.
Right, the master account.
Yeah. And if you look in that bucket at the end of the week and notice you were short $50, how are you supposed to figure out which of the 40 registers caused the shortage when all the money is just mixed together?
The short answer is, well, you can't. And that is exactly what the processors are banking on. Your funnel analogy perfectly illustrates the first massive leak in the reconciliation process. It really comes down to the clock itself. We are talking about batch close mismatches.
Right. How does the actual time of day cost an operator money?
It comes down to the default settings on your point of sale terminals. So terminals often default to coordinated universal time, known as UTC. Or they default to the time zone where the processor has its headquarters.
Okay.
Let us say your processor is based in New York, running on Eastern time, but you operate a store in the Pacific time zone. A customer buys dinner at 10:15 p.m. Pacific time.
So to the processor server in New York, it is already past 1 a.m. the next morning.
Exactly. Because of that time zone mismatch, the terminal has already closed its batch for the day. That 10:15 p.m. sale gets pushed into the next business day's batch.
Which means the store manager's point of sale report says the revenue was captured on Tuesday, but the bank deposit lumps it into Thursday's funding. The manager is probably pulling their hair out trying to match the receipt printer to the bank statement.
And it adds up fast. For a 12-store group doing $150,000 monthly per location, this simple timing mismatch can swing reported daily revenue by $3,000 to $6,000.
Yeah, that is a huge swing.
Yeah. Your weekly profit and loss statement might look correct overall, but your daily reconciliation is a complete mess. You are chasing phantoms every single morning.
So, even if an operator fixes their terminal clocks and solves the time zone issue, they still cannot see the full picture because of how the bank actually bundles the money. Let us talk about net funding.
Right. Net funding is a process where the acquirer takes multiple merchant IDs, or MEDs, and sends one single net ACH deposit per day. They take your gross sales across all locations, subtract the daily fees, subtract any chargebacks, and send you whatever's left.
Just whatever is left over.
Right. When you are processing $1.8 million in monthly volume, reconciling a single ACH variance is nearly impossible without a line-by-line breakdown.
You know, I am going to push back on this premise for a second. If I am a busy operator, why should I care about daily deposit noise? Like, if the weekly or monthly profit and loss statement eventually balances out, isn't it just a matter of waiting for the math to catch up? Why spend the labor hours fighting daily variances?
Because that daily noise actively hides per-store margin issues. It makes bad stores look good and good stores look bad.
How so?
Well, if you just accept the monthly aggregate, you might have one location bleeding margin through operational errors and another location operating perfectly. But because they share a bank line, the profitable store subsidizes the failing store. You cannot fix an operational issue if your accounting department has smeared the losses evenly across the entire chain.
Okay. That paints a very different picture. Once the daily deposit numbers are combined and skewed, the actual costs of running the business get assigned to the wrong places. Which naturally brings us to chargebacks and fraud. If bad stores are hiding behind good stores, chargebacks must be the ultimate hiding spot.
They are. This is cross-MID chargeback assignment, and it is painful. A customer initiates a chargeback at store number 7. But because of how the corporate hierarchy is set up with the processor, that chargeback gets deducted from the master corporate MID, not store number 7.
Meaning store 7 loses the physical inventory. But their financial reporting looks perfectly fine to the regional manager.
Yes. And meanwhile, the corporate margin looks terrible. The executive team will spend months chasing a corporate margin problem when the root cause is a training issue at one specific cash register.
That is wild.
And the Nilson report highlights just how big this fraud problem is getting. Global card fraud losses hit $0.1 $4 billion in 2023. They project those losses to reach $1.7 $1 billion over the next 10 years.
So it is only getting worse.
All right. As fraud and chargebacks rise, deducting a store's chargeback from the corporate MI distorts your entire operational reality.
And it gets even messier for specific industries. Restaurants, for example, have to deal with tip adjustments.
Restaurants are definitely the worst offenders here. In a typical restaurant environment, a server runs the card for the initial authorization, the customer signs the receipt and adds a tip, and the server enters that tip adjustment later in the evening.
Right, the classic sit-down model.
Yeah. Because tip adjustments often process after the initial batch close, the final deposit never matches the original point of sale gross.
Add offline transactions to that mix, too. Like if the internet goes down and the terminal stores the data to forward later, those transactions will batch on the day they were originally captured, not the day they're finally transmitted. The deposit is always guaranteed to be different from the daily gross sales report.
It is a reconciliation nightmare. But, you know, the biggest financial gap usually comes from bill-back pricing. This is a structure where the processor deducts the base interchange costs every day from your daily deposit, but they hold back their own markup fees and surcharges until the end of the month.
Oh, I see. It is like paying a group restaurant bill where the base cost of the food is charged to you immediately, but the tax and the tipper randomly charged 30 days later to a completely different person at the table. It forces you to visualize how absurd the standard industry practice really is.
It is completely absurd. If an operator only reconciles their business based on the daily bank deposits, they are missing a massive gap. The processor hits the account on the first of the following month for the remaining 0.40 to 0.85% of volume.
That is a huge chunk.
And because that monthly bill is so convoluted, compliance details slip right through the cracks.
Wait, what kind of compliance details?
Take surcharging, for example. Visa rules explicitly require merchants to notify their acquirer 30 days before they begin surcharging customers. Visa rules also clarify that for covered U.S. debit transactions, merchants are not required to prompt the cardholder to choose the application identifier or AID.
The AID, meaning the screen prompt on the terminal.
Right. The AID is just the technical term for the screen prompt that asks the customer to choose between U.S. debit or global Visa. When you just look at a single aggregated monthly bill, granular network rules and their associated fees get completely lost in the noise.
So what does this all mean in practice? Let us prove the math behind these leaks. We're going to walk you through a real-world case study of a quick-service restaurant group.
This is a perfect teardown to illustrate the financial impact.
Let us take a breath and look at their baseline numbers. We are looking at a 12-location QSR group processing $1.8 million in monthly card volume. Their average ticket is $14.20. The transaction mix is 72% credit and 28% debit.
Okay, got it.
They are on a tiered pricing plan with an effective rate of 2.85%. So out of that $1.8 million, they are paying roughly $51,300 in total fees every single month.
We need to break that $51,300 down. The interchange baseline for this specific card mix is roughly 1.65%. That amounts to $29,700 in hard network costs.
Right.
If we subtract the $29,700 from their total fee of $51,300, we see that the processor markup is $21,600. That is a full 1.20% effective markup just for the processor to move the money.
That markup is huge for a quick service restaurant. So the operators decided to run a line-by-line MID audit to see where the money was actually going. And they found three major structural issues.
Right. The first issue was a technical glitch. Three of the MIDs were downgrading interchange categories 11% to 14% of the time. This happened due to a gateway routing issue that was stripping address verification system data, or AVS data, from certain transactions.
Let us explain how that happens. A gateway software glitch essentially drops the zip code data before it reaches the network.
Yes, and when AVS data is stripped, Visa and Mastercard penalize the transaction. They see it as a higher risk profile because data is missing, so they automatically charge a higher interchange rate.
Ouch. So a tech glitch was essentially tricking Visa into charging them a penalty rate. What about the chargebacks we discussed earlier? Did those show up in the audit?
They certainly did. The flagship MID was quietly absorbing $1,400 per month in misallocated chargebacks that actually belonged to three other stores. Just as we discussed, the best performing store looked like it was bleeding cash because it was taking the hit for the underperformers.
Wow. And the third finding had to do with PCI compliance fees, right?
Two of the MIDIs were paying $29.95 per month in PCI non-compliance fees. They had been paying this for 14 months, even though the corporate chain had passed its security assessment in month two.
How does a chain pass a security assessment but still get billed for failing it? I mean, that makes no sense.
Because processors often require the merchant to manually upload the passing certificate to a poorly designed online portal. You pass the test, but if you fail to check one specific digital box on their website, the automated billing system just keeps fining you $30 a month per location.
That is just a pain in the neck. Let us tally up the financial recovery from finding those three leaks. Fixing the gateway issue and rerouting the interchange recovered 0.35% of their total volume. That equals $6,300 per month in pure markup recovery.
Incredible.
Recovering the invalid PCI fees added another $838. The annualized hard dollar recovery for this 12-location group was $75,600.
And that does not even account for the operational value of finally fixing the chargeback misallocations, which, you know, allowed the management team to hold the correct store managers accountable.
I have to ask a practical operator question here. We are talking about mapping out a massive spreadsheet to find these things. Is spending hours doing a line-by-line audit across dozens of locations actually worth the labor cost for a busy merchant? Managing a chain is chaotic enough without becoming a forensic accountant.
It is the highest return on investment activity an operator can perform. The fee math on your monthly statement is simply a side effect of your reconciliation map. If your structural mapping is broken, your fees will be inflated. You cannot negotiate what you cannot see at the MemID level.
Right.
If you go into a contract negotiation without knowing your exact per MIND margins, the processor holds all the cards.
Having proved the financial impact with hard numbers, let us transition to the actionable steps. What is the operator playbook? What are the exact steps you need to take this week to stop these leaks?
Step one is data collection. You need to pull every individual MID statement for the last 3 months. Do not accept the chain level summary report. You need the individual PDF statements for every single location.
What if they try to charge you for that?
If your processor tries to charge you a fee just to access your own location level statements, that is the very first fee you demand they remove.
Fair enough. And once you have those statements, you have to build a map. Create a document with one row for every merchant ID. You need columns for the legal entity, the doing business as name, the local batch close time, the UTC batch close time, the specific demand deposit account line it funds into, and the pricing plan.
With that map built, there are immediate demands you should make to your processor to fix the foundation. First, if you have more than 6 locations, you must switch from net funding to gross funding.
Which means every single location deposits into the bank account as a separate line item, making it the only way to quickly spot a variance.
Exactly. Second, demand that they align your terminal cutoffs to your local store time. The ideal batch close time is 1 hour after a location closes for the night. This stops late night transactions from bleeding into the next business day.
Okay, third, demand chain level interchange plus pricing. You want a single chain level monthly minimum fee. This eliminates the predatory permit minimums that drain money out of your slowest performing stores during their off season.
Finally, you need to set a fixed reconciliation cadence. Put it on the calendar for day 5 of the month. Pull all the MID statements, match them to your gross funding deposits, and file any disputes by day 15. The operators who do this every month find the patterns. The operators who only do it once a year find nothing.
This raises an important question to leave you with today. Consider whether your current processor's default reporting settings are intentionally designed to obscure your per-location margins. By keeping the data aggregated and difficult to parse, they prevent you from seeing the downgrades and the hidden markups.
It is a great point to ponder.
Mapping your own data completely shifts the balance of power in your next contract negotiation.
It changes the dynamic from a merchant asking for a better rate to an operator demanding the removal of specific, documented inefficiencies.
And that takes us right back to our original problem. If you want to know exactly which register is short at the end of the night, you cannot let 40 different stores pour their cash into one single dark bucket. You have to map the plumbing, fix the leaks, and count the drawers individually. Build your map this week.